And all of these neurologists, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this. You are cleared.
This is Sunday night's main event.
In clear violation of the law.
With Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone and I can be louder than each and every one of you.
On TSN Radio.
I'm not finished with you!
Elimination Chamber is only 1 week away. WWE's quarterly report tells us they're more profitable than ever, thanks to Saudi blood money. And Alpha versus Omega 2 is set for Double or Nothing. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sunday night's main event. It's your weekly pro wrestling recap heard on TSN Radio, MLWRadio.com, and all my patrons at patreon.com/SNMERadio. I'm Jason Agnew, going solo this week, but joined by a myriad of guests to get you informed in the next 2 hours of wrestling chatter. First up, we'll take an in-depth look at the AEW Double or Nothing developments this week and chat with Dave Meltzer, who was live at the pool party press conference and got to chat with some very important people in that company. Our triple threat this week brings together former WWE official and the host of Aftermath, Jimmy Corderas, and a new triple threater, host of the Matt Men podcast, Andrew Zarian. Dan Lavransky will pop by in the second hour to preview the WWE Elimination Chamber pay-per-view and try to finally win a beer from me in our six-pack challenge. Plus, we've got another second-round matchup in the Turnbuckle Trivia Tournament and your audio and written feedback. It's all coming up, but let's kick things off by getting you caught up on a very busy news week.
And now, your wrestling roundup on Sunday night's main event.
Obviously, the biggest news of the week came out of the AEW Double or Nothing ticket announcement party and internet broadcast on Thursday night. I'll give my thoughts on this in the next segment, but first, let me lay out the facts for you here. A number of new talent were introduced, including Greektown Wrestling regular and Lucha Underground performer Sonny Kiss, AAA Cruiserweight champion Sammy Guevara, as well as best friends Chuck Taylor and Trent Beretta. Brandi Rhodes then announced that Aja Kong and Yuka Sakazaki would both be at Double or Nothing. She then introduced Kylie Rae, who was confronted by Nyla Rose. Now, Kylie Rae has wrestled for Rise and Shimmer in the past, while Nyla Rose wrestled for Warriors of Wrestling along with several Japanese promotions, including Zero One. Nyla is the first transgender professional wrestler to be signed by a major organization. So clearly, with the inclusion of Nia and Sonny Kiss, AEW is leading the forefront to connecting to the LGBTQ community for professional wrestling as well. Which, if you know the history of professional wrestling, that's very forward-thinking. Continuing on with the press conference, the Young Bucks were confronted and then taken out by Pentagon and Phoenix to set up a match at Double or Nothing. MJF was there earlier in the night to cut a promo, as was Adam Page. Adam Page was interrupted by Pac via taped message. SCU came out to introduce some performers from OWE and promote a match with them. And then, yes, what everyone was waiting for did happen. Kenny Omega was introduced and announced he was a full-time member of AEW and an executive vice president for the company. Jericho then confronted Omega, and this led to a scuffle instead of a match at Double or Nothing as well. So here's the story with Omega. He's got a 4-year deal, but got the Jericho exemption clause as well, meaning he can work with New Japan and does not need to go through AEW in order to do so. So unofficially, we have this card for the Double or Nothing event. Kenny Omega versus Chris Jericho, the Young Bucks versus the Lucha Brothers, Hangman Page versus Pac, SCU versus Seema, and two OWE wrestlers to be named later, and Nyla Rose versus Kylie Rae. Ticket details were also given out. If you're looking to attend the show, registration is now open for a pre-sale that will begin tomorrow. That's Monday, February the 11th at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Pacific, with the public on sale starting on Wednesday, February 13th at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. I mean, if there's any tickets left over for that. You see, by the end of Thursday night, they had received nearly 12,000 requests for pre-sale codes. So this is pretty much guaranteed to be a sellout. Maybe the public doesn't even see tickets for this. Just one more note here before we move on beyond AEW. Following the press conference, Cody was quoted as saying this in a media scrum. Quote, "It sounds super romantic if you think about it. Dusty Rhodes competed with Vince McMahon. He lost. And here is his youngest son who is going to try to cut Vince's head off. It sounds super Game of Thrones. In the back of my mind, when it's just me, I think about it a lot. But I have Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, who have different visions. You can't turn the clock back on old wrestling. WCW was what it was, and it was friggin' awesome. What AEW is going to be is a different animal." End quote. Very interesting. Cody throwing himself right into the thick of things with that. Once again, Double or Nothing takes place at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas on Saturday, May 25th. It will also be accompanied by a second StarCast convention, and we have several announcements of appearances such as Bret Hart, Sting, Bruce Pritchard, Tony Schiavone, Eric Bischoff, Sean Mooney, Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler, and Shane Helms. On Thursday, WWE released their highly anticipated fourth quarter and year-end earnings numbers with some very impressive numbers on the monetary side of things, but unimpressive stats on the wrestling side of things. I don't normally get in-depth into these on the show, but I kind of found this fascinating and true proof that WWE is less a wrestling company and more a content creation enterprise. You see, revenues are just over $903 million for the year, up from last year's $801 million. The WWE closed the year with 1.563 million subscribers, 1.528 million paid and 35,000 free, which means over the fourth quarter, they lost nearly 100,000 subscribers. Now, revenue increases were attributed to an increase in TV rights fees and their yearly deal with, guess who? The Saudi Arabian government. In addition, of course, to the Australia Stadium show, which was also in the fourth quarter. Now, a couple points on the other side of things that were kind of glossed over. The company says they will no longer release a network subscription number the day after WrestleMania. If you remember, that was always something they'd hype and try to beat last year's numbers. Hence the free three-month offers around Royal Rumble time, hoping that people would stick around and, you know, they'd be able to use them in the Mania stats. Live event revenue was down, as was the average attendance at live events. Raw and SmackDown viewership numbers, get this, were down over 1 year by 15% and 14%. Respectively. Yikes! Despite this, the company forecasted $1 billion in revenue for 2019, bolstered by new TV deals that kick in during Q4. And speaking of revenue, WWE is set to make their return to Saudi Arabia this May. Fightful reported that their next Saudi show will take place on Friday, May the 3rd. Yeesh. Moving away from financials and into storyline, the WWE officially commented that their next superstar shakeup is set for April, and it's going to be here in Canada. Monday, April 15th and Tuesday, April 16th, the Bell Centre in Montreal will host those Raw and SmackDown episodes. Both are going to be shakeup episodes. Both will probably have little to no format, just like last year. Well, we've been talking about it for weeks, and as we head back to the Attitude Era style segments and angles, get ready for intergender wrestling on WWE TV. Well, at least at the house shows, because the first intergender match, Dean Ambrose versus Nia Jax, is going to be happening for a house show in Jonesboro, Arkansas on Friday, February the 22nd. I will not be surprised if this is just a trial run, and it's making its way to TV. WWE Tag Team Heavy Machinery went through a bit of a makeover this week, not physically, but on paper and graphically, since Otis Dozovich and Tucker Knight lost their last names. Yeah, WWE removed them this week. WWE.com, that is, removed them this week. So now they're just Otis and Tucker. My mind is blown at this, because look at the guy, Otis Dozovich. Calling him a nickname of Dozer just seems like Bulldozer. Seems completely appropriate for a team named Heavy Machinery. Why do they keep doing this? Moving on. One of my least favorite personalities in the company, former NFL All-Pro punter and current sports media personality Pat McAfee, has officially signed a contract with WWE. Michael Cole appeared on McAfee's podcast and stated, "The future's bright. It's just not going to be kickoff shows anymore for you. You've got a lot of stuff coming down the pipe, I hope." Hopefully, unlike Graves and Renee, who have gotten worse the more exposure they've had, McAfee will get better the more exposure he gets, because honestly, I can't imagine him getting any worse. In a strange WWE development, it looks like The Undertaker will not be at WrestleMania this year, and the reason why I say that is because Taker, aka Mark Calloway, joined Twitter last December and has recently removed all mention of WWE from his bio. He now lists an email address linked to Get Engaged Media, where he can be contacted for personal appearances and autograph signings. According to the Wrestling Observer newsletter, his fee for public appearances is, get this, $25,000 per hour. He'll be taking regular bookings starting in the summer. You know, if I'm the Khan family, it's a worthwhile 25 grand for me. Rey Fénix had a scare late this week at an AAW event in Austin, Texas. At the end of the match, he hit a cutter-style move and had to be stretchered out of the arena due to a neck injury. Later that night, AAW released the following statement, update on @RayPhoenixMX. He has been treated and released from the hospital with a muscle contusion. He is feeling good and will be back up to 100% after some rest. That is good news for Fénix, his Lucha brother, and pretty much every promotion under the sun, because these guys seem to work everywhere, and just this past week won the Impact Wrestling titles on their TV, which is going to lead them to a match on WrestleMania weekend with Rob Van Dam and Sabu. Yeah, you heard me correctly. Rob Van Dam and Sabu will challenge Pentagon and Fénix at their United We Stand event on April 4th. The Lucha Brothers were shown winning the Impact Tag Championships this past week, but it's not been stated if this match coming up is going to be a title match or not. Now, according to Cage Match, the last time RVD and Sabu teamed up together was back in 2015 when they defeated the Hardy Boys at the WrestleCon Super Show. They also teamed up on an episode of Impact Wrestling in 2010. Yeah, nearly 10 years ago. When they lost to Beer Money. ROH announced on Thursday that G1 Supercard Festival of Honor involving autographs, meet and greets, and swag will take place at the Hulu Theater at Madison Square Garden on Friday, April 5th. ROH also announced that this year's War of the Worlds tour will begin with a show in Buffalo, New York on Wednesday, May 8th. That'll continue to Toronto on Thursday, May 9th, and Grand Rapids, Michigan on Saturday before wrapping up in Chicago, Illinois on Sunday. Toronto's date will take place at the Ted Reeve Arena, which may be an okay time of year to work a building that does not have air conditioning. Tickets for the shows will go on sale to Honor Club members at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday, February 13th, and the general public on Friday, February the 15th. Pro Wrestling Sheet reported that El Hero del Fantasma, who goes by the name King Cuerno on Lucha Underground, filed a lawsuit against the El Rey Network and Babaji Productions, the production company behind Lucha Underground. The claims in the lawsuit are that both El Rey and Babaji have illegally restricted him and other wrestlers from engaging in their lawful profession. Now, Pro Wrestling Sheet also reported their current contracts only pay them $4,000 a year if they're not filming, as opposed to other organizations, which would pay them a living wage. Lucha Central is also reporting that a class action lawsuit is in the works, also involving Ivelisse, Joey Ryan, and Thunder Rosa, aka Cobra Moon. They're going to be getting involved to get out of their contracts as well. Clearly, everyone wants out of Lucha Underground since the likelihood of another season is low, and the wrestler free agent market right now, pretty, pretty hot. And finally, in case you missed it, which I'm sure you did, former WWE wrestler Eva Marie, and I use wrestler in the lightest sense of the word there, former WWE personality Eva Marie has been evicted from the Celebrity Big Brother home in season 2. She is out of there. And we are out of here, taking a break. When we come back, let's chat AEW and give you a bit of a review of their press conference. There were good points, there were bad points. We'll talk about it next. It's Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio. When the night is falling, thanks for listening to the free feed of Sunday Night's Main Event. If you'd like to hear the second hour, just visit patreon.com/SNMEradio and become a patron. This gives you access to the weekly shows and all the podcasts that we do as well. It's patreon.com/SNMEradio.
You know, first and foremost, I must apologize. I made you guys wait an incredibly long time for me to make this announcement. And trust me, it was never my intention. It's just so strange the way the world works with legalities and all that. But rest assured, I didn't put pen to paper until this morning. But I am very happy and excited to announce that yes, I have found my phone, and oh yes, I am now a full-time member of the AEW roster.
There's a clip from the AEW event this past Thursday, which I'm sure many of you maybe saw the whole thing, even though it was kind of long, or at least saw clips of. Now, first of all, let me say, I thought this was a big step up from their first press conference. It looks like they learned from some mistakes and made some choices this time that resolved the earlier problems. First things first, holding this press conference after dusk made it look so much better. By not relying on the sun for light, they created a more controlled environment with key points that were lit properly. I mean, you guys know I'm really, really sensitive to lighting. I always complained about that with Ring of Honor, along with their camera work and audio. And the camera work and audio at this event were better than the first time. That being said, those two things were awful at their initial event, so I really can't score this any higher than what I've seen watching Ring of Honor, which is not that much of a huge endorsement. I mean, I watched this thing from top to tail, from the pre-show with the commentators to the announcement of Kenny Omega, and much like my WWE mantra, I did find it kind of long, and the information came out very slowly. But I was doing other things while I watched it, so it wasn't awful. But it wasn't going to hold my attention for 90 minutes. It had no reason to be that long. I do want to talk about the commentators and TV presenters that AEW has decided to use. And, I mean, you guys know, I've been doing radio shows like this one for the past 20 years. And I also happen to work in television in Canada as a TV presenter. So if there's anything in the world of wrestling that I have credibility to take aim at, it's their presenters. In this case, Alex Marvez, Conrad, and Excalibur. They open this thing up. Now, Conrad is a known commodity to these fans and has a certain amount of credibility, and he dressed really nicely for the event. Well done. But Alex Marvez, this guy needs a stylist. He's out there looking disheveled in a terrible acid wash jeans, of which I think he might have had a t-shirt on under his AEW jacket on top. Listen, I'm all for the branding. It's very important at this juncture and this step in the life of AEW. But buddy, just put on some nice dress pants with the shirt and tie, throw the jacket over top, you're good to go. If you're going to play the part, then you have to dress the part. Now, as far as his actual presentation went, like, you know, what he's there to do, the way he hosted this event, listen, I get it. You're really happy to be there. But every word out of your mouth doesn't have to convey to me that you're in the process of living out your childhood dreams. In my opinion, he is not the right guy to be the broadcast lead on a major network. He can be on the web side of things, kind of like what Jeremy Borash used to do in WCW. And believe me, I'm not talking about Jeremy Borash now, because that guy's great. And maybe Alex Marvez grows into this role, but at the moment, he doesn't feel like a seasoned television personality to me. And I do think AEW needs that anchor to be there for them for all their presentations as they look down the line to a major television deal. People criticize Michael Cole all the time, but when it comes right down to it, he's not just good at his job. He is great at his job. He is an excellent, excellent TV presenter. Say what you will about his play-by-play, but as a TV presenter, he's excellent. The host of one of these shows is there to welcome you as the viewer and conduct themselves in a professional manner, making you, the viewer, feel confident that he knows what's going on and is about to lead you through anything that's going to happen within the broadcast. Essentially, he is the viewer's companion, and he's supposed to instill confidence in them, knowing that he has the confidence to present. I don't get that with Alex Marvez. Also, can someone please buy AEW a teleprompter? Just a rental. So there aren't tons of sheets of paper just thrown out on the desk that we can see in clear sight. Now, on the other hand of things, I don't want to be all negative here, because I thought the running commentary of Excalibur was excellent. He was able to perfectly fill the viewer in on each and every one of these personalities while they were arriving and fill in what would have been dead air during the walk from the entrance to the podium. He was excellent. And in my opinion, could fit very easily into the color commentator role once they find their main play-by-play guy. And by that, I mean most likely when JR's contract expires. And you guys know I'm not a fan of that happening. I'm just more so looking ahead at what I think is going to happen. And I do think JR will be their main presenter, for better or for worse. As far as the announcement went, they did a great job filling in their roster with some guys like Sonny Kiss, Sammy Guevara. My favorite moment of the night was when Hangman Page came out and made fun of Pac for wearing his gear to the last press conference. I mean, it's rare I'm going to have a laugh out loud moment while watching one of these things, but I was legit belly laughing at that. I thought it was a great line. Really well done. And actually, when they cut to Pac on the screen, everything seemed to go seamless there. They put forward the Bucks and the Lucha Brothers angle, which is great. I mean, that's what the crowd wanted to see, and that's fine. But when it came right down to it, this whole event was based around the debut of Kenny Omega. And you know what? Much like Cody, he looked great walking out in a suit. The only thing I kind of expected there was fireworks. They did so much with fireworks on that first day, which looked horrendous during the daytime, but they were at dusk. They would have looked amazing. Up with the Vegas Sky and the MGM Grand. I don't know, maybe they weren't allowed to do them or they didn't want to blow the budget on them. I was just kind of waiting for them and ready for them. Anyhow, Omega showing up and confirming he's full-time with the promotion and then being confronted by Jericho for a rematch. That's what people were there to see. They gave it to them. I guess there was a bit of a question if that is the right match to go with. And I asked myself that initially and then looked up and down their roster. And yeah, I think it has to be. Anyone else on this roster versus either one of these guys to start the promotion, I think would be seen as a disappointment. I mean, this is where your star power lies, and no one else compares to Omega or Jericho at this point. So overall, good second steps. There's growth seen production-wise here as well, but perhaps when they get a broadcaster on board, and by that I don't mean a person, I mean like a network, the network broadcast team can then assist with the production value so they don't have to concern themselves with that, would be very helpful. And get Alex Marvez off the broadcast team. Okay, let's take a break and come on back with the Triple Threat next. It's Sunday night's main event. You're listening to it on TSN Radio.
If you're a fan of Sunday night's main event, check out WrestlingObserver.com, a daily podcast, multiple podcasts per day, with hosts Dave Meltzer, Brian Alvarez, and a number of others. You get a full library of podcasts dating back to 2005, over 9,000 shows, hundreds of back issues of Dave's Wrestling Observer newsletter dating back to 1991, and so much more. Don't miss out. Check it out today, WrestlingObserver.com.
Is the Triple Threat.
There's gonna be a Triple Threat.
Triple Threat.
Triple Threat match.
On Sunday night's main event.
Triple Threat time here on Sunday night's main event. And joining us on the line this week, a regular of the Triple Threat, former WWE official and now co-host on Aftermath, Jimmy Corderas. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Jason?
I'm doing all right, and I'm happy to welcome on a new Triple Threat participant this week to take you on, Jimmy, and that would be Andrew Zarian from the Matt Men Podcast. Hi, Andrew. How you doing?
Hey, guys. How's everything?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us this week. So this week, I wanted to start chatting about Raw. Obviously, the focus right now on Raw is Becky and the confrontation that she had with Stephanie. Now, last week on the show, I talked about how I was just worried because Stephanie tends to browbeat every superstar she happens to be in the ring with. I got to say, though, after Monday night, I was pleasantly surprised. Andrew, what did you think of this confrontation and the continuance of this Becky versus McMahon's angle?
I'm really enjoying it. I mean, it's amazing how Becky Lynch has kind of exploded naturally, right? She's become a fan favorite through just her sheer ability to kind of get over with the crowd and really do a great job. The Stephanie McMahon stuff is really interesting, and it reminds me so much of the early Austin McMahon stuff. I even found a clip of it. Was literally almost the same exact type angle where Austin was hurt and he couldn't compete, and Vince comes and starts yelling at him and saying, I care for you. What are you doing to yourself? I really enjoyed Monday, and I was great transitioning into Tuesday as well.
I love the fact that finally Stephanie allowed herself to kind of be beaten up and it wasn't the browbeating. But Jimmy, let me throw this one at you. It was only 3 months ago where the McMahons were like, we want to give you what you want. We are going to, you know, redesign what we do here on Raw. However, they just can't help themselves from being heels.
Even when Stephanie, if you think about it, all the stuff that Stephanie said to Becky on Monday night from a storyline standpoint didn't come off heelish to me. It was like, okay, this is what a person in power is supposed to do to protect their talent, if you're thinking of it from a realistic standpoint.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
So to me, I know I'm in the minority in this one, and I said this on the show too. To me, it came off like Becky was the little bit of a whiner. Like, You know what I mean? It didn't help her, and especially in the backstage segment with Ronda the last 2 weeks, she has been punked out by Ronda Rousey in the mic. And that's where I'd say the difference is between her in the Stone Cold comparison that everybody's making. In that interaction with Ronda backstage, that if that was Stone Cold in his era, there would have been a massive pull apart.
Right.
Instead, Becky just sat there, smiled, took it, and, you know, with the famous line, ice and Advil, bitch.
Yeah.
That, you know what I mean? And now it's a T-shirt.
It is. It is a T-shirt, and proceeds are going somewhere. And you know, it's all about marketing.
Yeah. So to me, that's where the difference is. Stone Cold came off like, I don't care what you say, what you do. I'm going to do what I want to do. But Becky's coming off like, don't tell me what to do. It's kind of like, and I know Anthony made the point this week. Don't tell somebody you know won't be responsible for your actions and then go ahead and do it, because now you're responsible for your actions. So it's kind of like, whatever.
I do feel that this is so hot, and we talked about it extensively on the show last week, that these two are so hot, and Charlotte is still, I mean, I know we're 2 months away, but right now, Andrew, Charlotte being injected into this, it feels like such a shoehorn.
It really is, and they're doing it to kind of, you know, they got to pick a side, right? They got to either decide what they're going to do with this. Having Charlotte in there is kind of their excuse on not having the New York City crowd lose it on Ronda Rousey. I understand the logic behind that, but I think in order to get Becky Lynch as that person, as that main event player, you're going to have to beat Ronda, and it has to be a spectacular defeat. It has to be a way overblown moment where Becky Lynch gets her to tap and Ronda Rousey taps at Becky Lynch. And you can kind of continue to program after that if Ronda stays. But interjecting Charlotte, it's kind of taking it away from that, and it's kind of saving both for both separate brands. I understand the logic behind it, but I mean, for myself personally, I want to see Becky Ronda. I don't want to see Charlotte. The other thing that was interesting is that they're really doing a good job at teasing Charlotte and really making the audience dislike her even more, and dislike, I guess, you know, the whole thing where the McMahons are trying to, you know, hurt Ronda Rousey, hurt Becky Lynch with what they're doing. I think maybe that's coming into play here, and Charlotte's not going to be interjected in the end. I thought it was very interesting that they're continuing and they're playing with, I guess, the internet fans and the talk that's happening right now.
I do feel that Charlotte's in there by the end of it. Jimmy, though, how about this? Because instead of just having, you know, the one winner, how about an elimination match if you're going to go with this three-way?
That makes the most sense, because, as Andrew's saying, if you're trying to make Becky Lynch the big star at the end of this, if that's the end game, then why not having her pin Charlotte and making Ronda tap if that's the end game? That would mean a lot more than just a one-on-one. And I kind of feel like I get the idea that a one-on-one match at WrestleMania would be the most of the your base audience, that's what they want. But at the same time, if you look at it this way, WrestleMania is like their Super Bowl. And, you know, you're going to attract a lot of eyes that don't normally tune in, as your, i.e. your casual fans.
Right.
And to your casual fans, if it's a three-way, your three biggest stars in that match in order are Ronda Rousey, Charlotte Flair, and Becky Lynch comes in at number three.
That is true for the casual fan. You have the mainstream name of Rousey, the legacy and Flair name. So it's like MMA fans, you know, traditional wrestling fans, and Becky's in there as number three, but she's the one for the core fans. So I do think it serves all three purposes. We'll just continue along to see if they can make it work and not feel like such a shoehorn. Now, Jimmy, I want to lead with you on our next topic here, and that is the nostalgia that's currently happening on Raw. Gentleman that you worked with many a time, Jeff Jarrett, he all of a sudden pops back up on WWE TV, and now he's in an in-ring capacity more than once. How do you feel about this angle of him and the Road Dogg popping up to work with Elias?
I like the idea of the interaction between Jeff Jarrett, the one who, I guess, for lack of a better term, originated the guitar shot in WWE.
Oh, Jimmy.
Honky-tonk man.
Come on.
Well, I stand corrected. My brain sometimes, too many ref bumps, you know.
All right. Continue on, though. I understand what you mean. You're going back to a previous guitar gimmick with a new guitar gimmick.
Yes, and I don't mind it, you know, those two interacting temporarily on a short-term basis, like, i.e., one time. I think this is getting carried on to a little bit too much. And nostalgia is cool, but you don't want to overdo it. And I think that's what's happening here. And despite the fact that Jeff actually didn't look too bad in the ring, Road Dogg, on the other hand, sorry, Brian. there's a reason why he's got a backstage role. But anyways, I kid, Brian, if you're listening. But anyways, I don't mind it in spurts. For a short time, I just don't like prolonged angles or storylines involving it, unless it's somebody like a Kurt Angle, somebody like that.
Well, it's interesting to see what they're doing here with Jeff, because it seems there is a lot more to it than I thought there would be. And the weird part about this, and Andrew, I'll throw this one at you, you have two baby faces. Granted, you know, they're in their later years of their careers, the twilight, and pretty much retired with Jarrett and Road Dogg, but it's the two baby faces still double-teaming the heel here.
Yeah.
It's weird, right?
Yeah, it's really weird. I'm going to tell you, though, one thing that was very impressive, and it kind of shows a little bit of a weakness with the current rosters, how well Jeff Jarrett throws a punch.
So many people have mentioned that to me. Still the best punches in the business.
Oh, man. I was looking at it. You know, we were doing a live tweet while we do it. We were watching Raw, and I was blown away at how people saw those punches, and everybody said, oh, my gosh, I forgot how people like Jeff Jarrett and Bret Hart, they had these phenomenal punches that were being thrown. I really enjoyed seeing Jeff, but again, I think the nostalgia act, you know, it runs its course quick. I'm curious to see where this goes with it. Obviously, it's going to lead to some sort of match again at a pay-per-view or something. And then, you know, you go away with it. I think it gave Jeff a nice little return, and it kind of made up for all the bad stuff that happened between him and the company over, you know, many years ago. I think these nostalgia gimmicks and acts that they do, I enjoy it for the short period, but like Jimmy said, you know, where do they go from here?
Yeah, and you know, you're giving Jeff Jarrett TV time, and this leads me to my next point of someone who definitely did not get the debut that they have, in my opinion, deserved, and that is EC3. He finally shows up on Raw. This, to me, EC3, number one, what's he good at? Okay, he's got a great physique. But on top of that, it's his speaking ability. The guy can cut a great promo. Jimmy, it baffled me on Monday night where he was booked to not speak.
I don't know. I guess his new gimmick is EC3 the mime.
Yeah.
I just don't understand it. Unless the game plan is for them to finally let him speak and just blow everybody away with his promo ability. Other than that, I just don't understand it. And still, this whole thing about which brand he's going to be on, we still don't know. This has gone on long enough. Are they going to drag it out until the international superstar shakeup in Montreal in April? I don't know. It just pick a brand already and put him on there and put some focus on him.
Yeah, I mean, what people have said about this debut is even though he didn't get to talk, he still got the win with Ambrose. it's like WWE has taught the viewer that wins and losses don't matter all that much. I mean, it's great as he won, but to me, Andrew, he seemed to be in this angle just as a byproduct to push towards what seems to be going Ambrose and Nia.
That's terrifying, right? That's
well, you know it's terrifying. Booked, right?
That's,
February 22nd.
That's a WrestleMania match.
Well, February 22nd, that match is happening on a house show, and I'm wondering how fast it makes it to TV because I do think it's going to happen.
Yeah, they're building to it. I don't know what to make of it. I feel bad for Ambrose if this is, you know, maybe this was the reason that he's leaving, or if it, you know, if it's not, you know, we could only go based on a press release that WWE is releasing. Who knows what they're planning with this? But with Nia Jax doing intergender matches, you know, this is their testing of the waters to see how this does and what kind of media attention it gets possibly with the
right.
house show match. I'm terrified that this is going to be a WrestleMania match for Dean Ambrose. I don't know how I feel about it, especially with him being built up. You know, potentially he would have had the main event according to Dave Meltzer, right, at WrestleMania. And now he's in a very different type of position within the company. As far as EC3 goes, another thing I'm terrified is that they continue this no-speaking thing.
Oof.
And that's his thing. He just poses and he has a nice body, he's a stud, and he doesn't talk.
That would be absolutely terrible for him, and hopefully it doesn't go that way. Jimmy, I want to touch on WrestleMania with you, though, and what Andrew brought up there in regards to Dean Ambrose. Putting him on the WrestleMania card, though, would actually, despite working with Nia, would actually be beneficial to him monetarily, though, correct? Because if he's not on Mania, then he doesn't get the payout. And that's a key one for performers, is it not?
Yeah, everybody looks forward to that WrestleMania payday. I mean, like, even as referees, we did too.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was the big payday of the year. As far as the intergender stuff, I just don't like the mixed message, because we look back at the mixed match challenge and the rules there where the guys couldn't interact with the girls.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so, again, it's sending a mixed message. Why is it different with Nia Jax? I get it that she's a little more intimidating than most of the other ladies on the roster, but at the same time, for me, it's that mixed message that I don't like. And as far as Dean Ambrose's future is concerned, I mean, like, do we know for certain that he's gone? I mean, there's that speculation. I think he is gone.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, that's what you do on the way out. You do the honors for people. I just don't know if doing the honors for Nia Jax is the right way for him to go out.
It's kind of funny that this angle is coming up now as Jeff Jarrett comes back to WWE TV, well known for that good housekeeping match, right?
Uh-huh.
My prediction is Ambrose versus Nia Jax, not on Mania, on Fastlane. So they don't even get the big payday, but Ambrose gets the embarrassment. Let's talk about the next pay-per-view before Fastlane, though. And, Jimmy, I want to start with you here because it's the Elimination Chamber. And, you know, you were in the company when the Elimination Chamber first happened.
Mm-hmm.
This is a complicated match. It's a match that's potentially dangerous due to the structure itself. And we're going in there with not only six female performers, but 12 female performers, tag teams, making it even more complicated, many of them with not that much experience. This has train wreck. Like, I'm talking abysmal, well-known train wreck for many, many years written all over it, in my opinion. What do you think?
I have my concerns for this match. Like you said, doubling the actual number of participants in this match, it's already a bit of a cluster with six, if all six participants are in it at the same time. Having 12 in there just makes it even more challenging. I trust that they're going to try to put something together to minimize the cluster effect.
Right. Eliminations quickly, I would guess.
Yeah, but at the same time, you're right. This is a recipe for not coming off too well, and and the inexperience is going to be a big factor. The biggest thing that they're going to have to learn to do, and hopefully they could instill in the participants in this, is the KISS method. Keep it simple, stupid. You don't have to go crazy. The structure itself is intimidating enough that you don't have to go overboard. Like, leave that to the guys. I'm sure they'll be doing something crazy.
Andrew, as we end off here talking about this match, who do you see walking away as the first ever, you know, WWE women? Not the first ever, because there were titles before, but in this new era, you know, the first women's champions.
I mean, the obvious guess would be Bayley and Sasha, right? I mean, that's a very strong possibility, and that's kind of a story that's been told for a good year and a half at this point. You know, the chemistry between them, they were friends, they're not friends, they're back together. So I think that would be a interesting person to put it, two interesting people to put it on, that could potentially lead to a split and then a match.
Right, yeah. I mean, if they finally go down that alley. Jimmy, is that your favorite as well?
Yeah, all signs point to them. I'm trying to think of a better solution, but it, you know, they've been prominent more than anybody else, so I would guess them.
All righty, well, there you go. Those are the guesses. We're going to find out next week. Of course, we're going to be live here next week doing Sunday night's main event. While we do that, though, gentlemen, where can people find you? Jimmy, you go first.
On Twitter, if you dare, at Jimmy Corderas. Also on Aftermath on Tuesday nights on Sportsnet 360 here in Canada at 7:30, right before SmackDown Live. And on here, too. Every once in a while, you'll hear me on Sunday night's main event.
You got it. And Andrew, thanks for joining us for your first week on the show. Great job. Where can people hear you more?
Of course, the Matt Men Podcast. You can download that anywhere. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Zarian. And, of course, Matt Men Podcast on Twitter.
Awesome. Thanks, gentlemen. We will have you both on again very soon.
Thanks, Jay.
Thank you.
But we are not done here on the show. No, no, no. We've got a whole nother hour to come. Dave Meltzer kicking us off. Turnbuckle Trivia, a second round competition. Talking about the original Hart Foundation this week. It's tough. And Dan Lavransky just, you know, trying to scrape and crawl his way back into the six-pack challenge stats. We will do that in our second hour. It's Sunday night's main event. You're listening to it on TSN Radio. If you enjoy Sunday night's main event and you enjoy nostalgic wrestling t-shirts, have I got a deal for you. It's the official Sunday night's main event t-shirt, available at prowrestlingtees.com/SNMEradio. Your choice of white or black t-shirt with that awesome logo that looks a lot like something you used to watch once a month on Saturday nights on NBC, but just different enough. Hopefully. Get your t-shirt today at prowrestlingtees.com/SNMEradio.
Becky, I understand that you don't want to be evaluated by a doctor. I remember what happened the night that you invaded Monday Night Raw and Nia Jax exploded your face. I was with you in the trainer's room. Your nose was broken. You were bleeding everywhere. But all you wanted to do was fight. You are so incredibly tough. You're all heart. You'll do anything, anything for this moment. And I know it. And you know it. But I cannot let you physically compete if you are not cleared by our medical staff.
Doctor, doctor, can't you see I'm burning, burning?
Welcome back to Sunday night's main event, and it is feedback time. Audio feedback, that is. As we mentioned, when I'm not doing the live shows, I tape on Sunday afternoons. And if you guys want to get your voices heard, all you have to do is send me a note, an audio clip on Facebook, and I will play it here on the show. I always post up how to do this on our Facebook group, which all you have to do is search SNME Radio. So let's get to a bit of audio feedback number one.
Hansy from Toronto. I just want to say that even though I know it's been tiresome with all the authority angles over the last 15 to 20 years, I think there are certain characters that thrive off of that. Like maybe Roman Reigns didn't thrive off of it because it didn't seem authentic. But when Daniel Bryan and Becky Lynch are doing it, I feel like there's something that's edgy about it. I don't want it to be the whole WrestleMania build, but I'm not disliking what I'm seeing. I think Becky showed up Triple H perfectly. She showed up Stephanie McMahon perfectly. And I hope, you know, it continues. And I just want to know what your thoughts are about that. But I'm pretty sure by the time that you play this, you're already given your thoughts. So this is probably going to make me look stupid.
Hansy, come on. We all know, listeners of this show all know, that this doesn't make you look stupid. You've asked much dumber questions on the show when it's been a live show. I'm kidding, pal. Thanks for the feedback. As far as the authority figure angle goes, yes, it's a tired storyline structure because it's repetitive. However, I think you're right. You can't deny that what is currently going on with Becky Lynch, and it's actually what Jimmy Corderas mentioned in the Triple Threat, is that both Triple H and Stephanie are just saying things as bosses. How can we have you in our ring when you're not cleared to work? Go to the doctor, get cleared, and then get in the ring. That's not that heel-ish. The crowd might be perceiving it as heel, but it's actually just something a boss would do. And Daniel Bryan's completely removed from this. I think he's off on his own right now. There's really no heel authority figure with Daniel Bryan, which is good. I think that you want to separate yourself from that angle. And not involve it there and just focus on the Becky angle. And right now, it's a different dynamic. I think it's going to go on to be the same dynamic because odds are, you know, if Becky manages to get one, if not both titles, you'll have her face off against Stephanie because Stephanie can't help herself for being put into the main women's angle to somehow, some way, take credit for it. But I think you're right. Right now, this angle's going very well. And tomorrow night, we see Becky on Raw once again. I do wonder if that's going to the well once too often already, because there's, I don't know if you need it now. You have still two pay-per-views before WrestleMania. So hold off, maybe. Maybe if you're, because you're pushing towards the Elimination Chamber, maybe Becky doesn't need to do something in the ring this week. Don't overexpose it. But I think you're right. Right now, it's good. It's hot. They're doing a great job. Next.
Hi, Jason. It's Jay from the Windy City here. I just want to talk a little bit about All Elite Wrestling's press conference in Las Vegas on Thursday night. I was pretty entertained by it. Really loved the Jericho and Omega confrontation at the end of the show to the penultimate segment of that night. But to me, the announcements were pretty underwhelming. And in my opinion, I think All Elite should hold off these press conferences until they have more significant announcements, like a TV deal, and have some pretty bigger stars, in my opinion. But what do you think so far?
Thanks, Jake. But you're crazy. Absolutely insane. No. I just mean that this was the perfect time for AEW to do this. They had to announce the tickets. They had Kenny Omega in their pocket, and they knew that they were going to have him for this. If Omega was not available to do this particular press conference, there was no reason for it. But you mentioned getting bigger names, bigger signings. Who's bigger than Kenny Omega in this time right now? I don't think there's anyone for this audience that's bigger than Omega. And having the face-to-face for him and Jericho, that's definitely what you wanted to do. At the moment, I think AEW, as I said, is making perfect strides. As far as the TV deal goes, Meltzer and I talked about this last week, where if they have it in place, it's a matter of staying relevant in the marketplace and keeping your name out there. You do the press conference, which, yes, I'm talking the first one. They could have done that better. They learned from that. They've done this one. Ticket release, Omega. Great. Then when you do the event, you announce the television at the event. It keeps people going. It keeps names out there. And that is the key. Stay in the public eye when you don't have television. Do fewer events, but do more important events. And I think they've done a great job doing that. All right. Next up, continuing on with the AEW questions, we have Felipe from Chile.
Hello, Jason. I'm Felipe from Chile again. I have a little question because in South America, we don't know the importance about the TV deals in the channel that you put wrestling. So in the case of All Elite Wrestling, for you, what kind of a good deal could put All Elite Wrestling in a good position in North America to be in television?
Great question, Felipe. So I'm in Canada, so I'm not, you know, I do follow, of course, the American television market, but it's a little bit different up here. And honestly, for Canadian listeners of this show, I don't know where All Elite would fall into the marketplace in Canada. Maybe TSN? I mean, they did this documentary on Kenny Omega, and you have Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho. one born in Canada and one generally considering himself Canadian that are involved in the main event of this. But TSN has been reluctant to air wrestling programming since what happened with, it would have been, the live sex show with Edge and Lita, which is what was the straw that broke the camel's back with TSN and the WWE. Now, this is something different, and if it's going to get ratings and get some hype, maybe TSN will be open to it. I mean, you know, content is everything nowadays. As far as the U.S. goes, and as far as their deals in general, Felipe, I think what has to happen with All Elite is they have to find a happy medium between exposure and money. I mean, you got to have money coming in from your TV deals, but it can't just be something like DAZN that is hard for the mainstream audience to find. The mainstream audience will not find DAZN. They will remain at this level of, yeah, it's something cool that wrestling fans know about, but that's all. You want to break into the mainstream. You want to get on TV. So I think it's a matter of doing a deal. This is why I think Turner has something to it here. Because if you can get on TNT, but also provide some content for their online service, then you have the best of both worlds going on. And I think that is the key. A half-half split. Some money, but also a lot of exposure. There's value in both of those things. Maybe even a little bit more for exposure at this point for AEW and where they're heading. All right, continuing on.
Hey, Jason, Dave from the UK here again. In the wake of the WWE looking like they're going back to Saudi Arabia in May, what are your thoughts on whether there'll be any backlash to this particular event? Will it be worse than Crown Jewel? And as it looks like they're going to do at least two events a year, do you think that the backlash will actually lessen due to the repetitive nature of these events? Cheers.
David, thank you very much for the feedback once again. And honestly, I think if anything was going to happen with people rejecting the Saudi Arabia deal, it would have already happened. And it did somewhat. Apparently, 35,000 people canceled their WWE Network subscription in regards to what happened with when the Khashoggi case was on and they still decided to run that show. So if nothing more came of it than that, in the midst of all that worldwide controversy with a man being dismembered, nothing's going to happen now. No one's even going to pay attention to it. It'll just exist. It'll just happen. And it'll just be there, and WWE will continue to make record amounts of money. Even though some of it is Saudi blood money. We're going to take a break. Come on back. Dave Meltzer on the other side of the break. Turnbuckle Trivia, Dan Lavransky, all of that in our second hour, Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio.
Everybody's going to pay.
Thanks for listening to the free feed of Sunday night's main event. If you'd like to hear the second hour, just visit patreon.com/SNMEradio and become a patron. This gives you access to the weekly shows and all the podcasts that we do as well. It's patreon.com/SNMEradio.